You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
You feel this nervousness on the phone there?
Sir, I've been trying to make an urgent phone call up there.
I don't think it's something I want to do on an overseas phone.
You gotta make some phone calls. Hang up the phone. Prank caller.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Packernet After Dark. It's late. It's dark. Let's take some phone calls. Last time we did this, we ended saying we got a couple from Nico, and we do. And that's how we're going to start the day. Nico, go ahead and take it away, my man.
So we're just handing out game balls today. This is Nico from Idaho.
Hey, Nico.
It's not 3 in the morning, and my wife is still sleeping next to me.
Thank you.
Talk normal.
Thank you.
First off, you know, having two tackles back on the offensive line, they may not be perfect yet. I know Bach hasn't played for 2 years, and Jenkins, this is his second game back, and I know they limited Bach, but I tell you what, give him 4 or 5 weeks to just remember what it's like to get the crap beat out of you and block. And I tell you what, that's just only going to make our offensive line better. I know that was kind of the weak point yesterday. I look for that to just get better. Unless one of them got injured today and I haven't heard about it. So game balls to those two. Rasul sliding out there after Jair got hurt.
Yeah, was
a bummer. But the fact that he slid out there and just was a stud, and that Nixon cat coming in and taking his spot and just downing punks on the 1 yard line. What the heck? His PFF grade has to be good. We better have a better PFF grade just for that. You know, Dobbs. Freaking Dobbs, man. God, he looks good. I know they were comparing him to Devontae. I don't know. I mean, he doesn't really look like him. He looks a lot faster. And I know he's probably just in scooter mode, do a little now, but when they get him in full drag race mode, look out. I still think, you know, we all wanted at least one of the receivers to pop. So we got one to pop. I still think Watkins can do it. He just got to stay on the field, you know, so he gets the game ball. Lazard and Cobb, those guys, I tell you. You mentioned earlier today, Lazard's never open, still catches the ball.
Yep.
Cobb, I know on that first pass, Cobb was over-pursued by number 45. Yeah, he just spun around that fool, left him like a tree. I was very impressed with Cobb. He looked like 2014 Cobb. Campbell, what can you say? The dude's a tackling machine. Had the game-winning deflection. Just can't even say enough good about him. Walker, I can't remember the last time we had someone punch a ball out of a receiver. Teams do it so much.
Yep.
Like the Ravens always do it every other game. I cannot remember the last time we actually punched a ball out. Kudos to Walker. He gets a game ball. The punter, whoever he is, don't know his name. Dude killed it. Even in preseason, it seemed like every time he punted the ball, the guy catching the punt was running back. So he is just killing it. The special teams killed it. I think Gary, if he rushed the passer 25 times, had 25 pressures and probably 20 holds as well. Smith is entering stud territory. And Jones and Dillon, I don't know if they had no holes. They looked a little, you know, Jones looked good at times, but he was stuffed a lot too. And the refs, man, they tried. They sure tried. I don't care what those announcers said. Not calling that late when they hiked it was just booty. So, hey, we won. And probably getting close to the 3-minute cutoff time. So go Pack Go and let's go kick some other team next week.
That was good, man. That was right at 3 minutes. You probably had that on your phone, so you could tell. But that was pretty impressive. I think you call back in a second here. I don't know if you're giving out more game balls. I think maybe what we should have done is maybe just hand out some sorry you tried, but it wasn't quite good enough to get a game balls. You know, not even necessarily like we're not giving out dunce caps or anything. Just you weren't quite good enough to get this, and then maybe a couple dunce caps, but. Because we covered a lot of ground there. Pretty much like all the receivers, the offensive line, Rashawn, Quay, Campbell, Rasul, Nixon. Did you say Stokes? Stokes should be on the list. Anyways, let's see what you got in your next call before I go on too much. Maybe that's what we're doing here.
Hello, sorry. How could I forget? Clark. Dude, if he keeps going like this.
Kenny.
I don't know.
But yeah, no. I'll let you finish because you're almost done.
All I can do is help the fact that he's a big, huge, fat stud. So, anyways, go Pack Go. Cannot talk about old Kenny Clark. So, here's next week.
Yeah, I have been maybe the only Packer fan, if not one of very few, that has been to some degree critical of Kenny Clark and saying that we've been maybe a little too hyped on Kenny. Dude, he is, if he's not the best player on this entire team right now, I'd maybe be a little bit surprised, because just the couple times that I've watched our defensive line, he wins every time, every single time. And it doesn't mean he's always making the play, but I mean, you look at run plays where he's double teamed and he'll push the whole double team and at least force the running back to bounce somewhere else. And then it's somebody else's problem that missed a tackle or whatever else. But it's unbelievable what that guy's doing. Also, I think it's funny that every time somebody says go Pack Go, it says go Petco on here. I wonder if you can pay Google to translate things a certain way. It seems odd that Petco, and it's capitalized and everything, is on here. What could I pay them to translate? Maybe anytime somebody says Packers not, like Packers are not that good, it'll just say Packernet that good. It'll be like, dang, I don't know what Packernet is, but it must be pretty good. Just a thought. Deep thoughts with Jack Handy.
Hello, Ryan. It's Jake from Utah.
Hey, man.
CeeDee Lamb just dropped a wide open, huge play pass down the field. Yep. And all I can think of is, thank God, no one will talk about the Christian Watson thing. Hopefully, everybody can hopefully just get off of that and look at this, because that was a huge drop in the middle of this game. Wide open, way more separation than Christian Watson had. And he still dropped it right past his chest in between his arms. Anyway, the Cowboys, I hate them. Bye.
So I don't know if you're being sarcastic. I think you are, but the point is well taken if you are, because that's not going to happen. If you were to ask people about CeeDee Lamb, he's a premier wide receiver. If you ask people about Christian Watson, he's that bum that dropped a wide open pass. That's it. Nobody will acknowledge those things happen. In fact, here is a list, full comprehensive list of wide receivers that have dropped passes 20 yards or more. Christian Watson, Irv Smith, Jamal Agnew, Jamar Chase, Chase Claypool, Elijah Moore, CeeDee Lamb, Cooper Kupp, Jakobi Meyers, Sterling Shepard, and Tyreek Hill. Yeah, well, Christian Watson just had that one, so, you know, whatever. Okay, well, CeeDee Lamb has had three, so it's not that big of a deal. Beyond that, Irv Smith and Jamal Agnew also had just one. Jamar Chase has only had two and dropped one. Sterling Shepard had two and dropped one. In fact, only two players have had more than three passes of the guys that dropped it, more than three passes, 20 yards or more. Cooper Kupp has had four. Tyreek Hill has had six. So, yeah, I mean, until he catches a deep pass, I mean, it's no different than, you know, Dobbs and everything else. It's the same thing I told you about Devontae and all the other narratives. You're going to keep hearing about Devontae dominates and all the other Packers wide receivers suck until our wide receivers can do better than Devontae. Now that that's the case, where Dobbs has literally been a better wide receiver the last 2 weeks out of three than Devontae, not saying he's better at football, I'm just saying statistically that's what's been the reality, now the narrative is gone, right? Dobbs in general, he had drop issues until now when he doesn't seem to have drop issues. So they just have to overcome it. Right now, Watson has one play that's a deep pass, and he dropped it. And he's going to have that stigma of being a bust and being a bum, and everyone's going to laugh at him and all this stuff. Haha, could have had Pickens, who literally hasn't done anything. The Pickens love is so stupid. But could have had this, could have had that. Instead, you took him. Until he shows up and comes back from injury and catches a bunch of passes and gets 100 yards and two touchdowns, nobody cares. But it'll happen, and then everyone will shut up. Until then, he's just that guy that's a bust that can't catch passes. That's it.
What's up, Brian? This is Blake's dad.
Hey, man.
Just calling to say I'll be at the Packer game this Sunday against the Patriots. And with the news yesterday of Mac Jones being out, they got Brian Hoyer coming in. Not sure if that's better or worse. Probably a little worse, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I saw a report from NFL Rums on Twitter. I know they're not the greatest thing ever, but it said something about Patriots could kick the tires on Cam Newton. That wouldn't scare me at all, but I guess.
You know, sometimes those NFL Rums accounts, they basically just regurgitate other news, right? So I've retweeted NFL Rums before because it's real news, and that just happens to be the first one that I see, so I retweet it. That's it. Sometimes they just say stupid stuff. Now, maybe this is an instance where they saw Ian Rappaport say it and they whatever. I don't think so. I think that's what the NFL Rums guys like to do is mix in their stupidity with real news so that, you know, you can say that they're real, but then they bring up fake stuff and everyone's like, oh, dang, that's, and then they get a billion retweets or whatever, while still maintaining the air of legitimacy by just typing out the exact same thing that Ian Rappaport said, just getting it out like 15 seconds later, and then just bank on thousands of people like me seeing theirs first and retweeting it, and then them becoming something that everyone wants to follow and all that stuff. I would assume I'm 95% sure that's complete garbage. Let's go with Adam Schefter on this one. The actual Adam Schefter with the real check mark and all that stuff. Bill Belichick told reporters today that if Mac Jones can't play Sunday in Green Bay, Brian Hoyer would be the Patriots starting quarterback. So again, that's what always made the most sense to me. You want to bring in that sort of game manager that's going to just be able to execute at a very marginal level while we run the ball down their throat and hope to bring pressure on Rodgers and maybe you can get a couple lucky takeaways. Some other interesting news. Apparently, Mac Jones is not being ruled out of this game. I thought it was a very serious injury that was going to keep him out like a minimum of a month, probably several months. I don't know. But either way, I don't know what the better situation, as you said, I have no idea what's better. A banged up Mac Jones versus Brian Hoyer. A healthy Mac Jones versus Brian Hoyer, considering how Mac's doing. I don't know. I don't really know. I think Mac Jones provides you a higher ceiling, but also a lower floor. Look at all the picks and everything and how bad things are going for him right now. Although, again, Brian Hoyer, like 50-50 touchdown interception. But anyways, yeah.
As a person in the stadium, I'd much rather see Cam Newton than Brian Hoyer.
I get it.
Kind of wondering how that's going to look. Hopefully we get some interceptions that we don't ever seem to get. But yeah, that's really it. I guess maybe if you're doing a live stream or something, I'll make sure to bring some headphones this time. All right, later.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I don't know if we're going to do one or not. We might. I don't know. We'll see. I kind of miss it. I don't like doing it, but when I'm not doing it, I'm like, man, I wish I was doing a stream. I kind of like it. There's things that are really awesome about doing it, and there are things that are awesome about not doing it. And no matter what, I'm going to miss doing it the other way. So just out of curiosity, I'm just checking for the Cam Newton news. Not really seeing that. I'm seeing a massive amount of speculation saying they should bring him back. Barstool Sports. I don't know. People just tweeting it all over the place. Patriots Wire. Should the Patriots bring in Cam Newton? So pretty sure we can rule that out, although who knows? Last minute, this, that, or the other. But I'm guessing if they liked Cam Newton that much, he would have been the number two quarterback, right? There's Brian Hoyer and Bailey Zappi are there for a reason. Cam Newton's still floating around out there. Why wouldn't he be on your roster if you wanted him to be there in case of a disaster, right? So probably can just rule that one out.
Hey, it's Nico. So hey. Let me get this straight.
Okay.
PFF has a thing where if you have like an amazing play, like a punch out.
Yeah.
Fumble that totally swings the entire, you know, like destiny of the direction of who's going to win. You just get a little bit of like yay, sort of thumbs up. But if you have a bad play, it affects you super negatively. That seems.
I don't think that's it. A lot of people are mad because Quay Walker got a bad grade and he punched the ball out. It's one out of 55 plays, right? That's it. And I think, again, if fans were to set up PFF, the big plays would be weighted much heavier. And so the way I think of it is PFF is on a 2-point scale, I believe, quite positive. It's a 2-point scale, and it's in 0.5 increments, so it's kind of like a 4-point scale, I guess. I don't know. Doesn't matter. I think if it was up to fans, it would be like a 10-point scale or a 20 or a 50 or a 100-point scale, and Quay Walker would have a negative grade, and it would be, let's say, on a 10-point scale, like a -1. Like, he didn't quite do his job, -1, -1. And then there would be that punch out would be a 10-point thing, right? I think most fans kind of operate that way. That's why Trayvon Diggs, they hate PFF because he should have, look at all the interceptions, he should have a much higher grade. This is the problem I have with the PFF grades in general, is that this part of it is subjective. Like I said, there's a sliding scale. There's objective and subjective, and they're on opposite ends of the scale, and you slide one way or another. The benefit of completely objective things, things that are 100% true. If you threw a touchdown, you got one touchdown. There's no question. There's no deciphering. There's nothing that goes into that. It's 100% real. The problem is things that are 100% objective don't usually paint a relevant picture. As you slide over to the other side of the scale, we're bringing in more information. The problem is how you decide what is relevant and how relevant it is and how to put that all together into one score. You're kind of making that up. I'm sure you're using your best judgment and lots of math with charts and graphs and all that stuff to try to come up with the best possible thing. But again, why a 2-point scale as opposed to a 3 or a 4 or a 5? And when somebody has a bad play, how bad was it? Why would you call that a negative 0.5 as opposed to a negative 1.5? So there's a whole lot of like, I don't really know. Here's what I'll say, though. I tend to agree, and that, by the way, is why I said PFF is mostly about consistency. Because really big plays don't really move the needle that much. I mean, it's going to be a 2, or call it a 4, I guess. Well, how many negative plays would it take? I mean, 4 marginally bad plays, negative 0.5, and it erases the interception. And again, most people would disagree with that, but here's why I tend to agree with it. I don't want a situation where somebody is a garbage corner and gets a pick 6 in a game because a quarterback sucks, and then I get told that that's the best corner in football. I think that's true of Quay Walker, too. If I look at the grade and it says he got an 80 overall grade, and I'm like, dang, he had a good day. He was a good football player in this game. And then PFF is like, well, no, he actually kind of sucked, but he punched the ball out once, so we gave him a really good grade. That doesn't help me. I know that he punched the ball out once. I can see it on the stat sheet. I saw it in the game. I want to know how good of a football player he is. But if I know he punched the ball out and I know he got graded quite highly and he still ended up with a 55 whatever overall grade, or I don't remember what he had, then that tells me, despite that really good game, on a play-to-play basis, he didn't do a very good job. That's what I want to know. Now, again, maybe other people would rather have it a different way. I just want to know, like, you know, how much did you influence the game? Well, you make a couple tackles, who cares? You do a good job in coverage, but the ball doesn't go that direction, who cares? What I care about is, did you get a pick? Did you get a sack? Did you punch the ball out? Did you recover a fumble? Those are the biggest things. I personally don't really want that. Now, you could squabble over, maybe it should be a little higher, maybe it should be a 5-point scale, or a 3, or a 4-point scale, so it weights a little heavier in that direction, because obviously that's the most important things. I have resigned myself to saying, in certain instances, I don't really care about the grade. I'm happy with what Quay did because we basically won the game because of him, in part. I mean, there's several individual things that happened that if they didn't happen, we probably don't win. That's one of them. His contribution to this game helped contribute to a win in such a way that we don't win without him. And so the fact that he was marginally bad on most of these games, but not catastrophically bad, but just on most of the plays, I mean, okay, oh well, that sucks. I mean, he's a rookie. It's not a big deal. Maybe it is a big deal. I don't know. Same with Rashawn. He's getting all the pressures, but the grade is lower. Most fans probably be furious at that. I'm looking at that saying, okay, on a play-to-play basis, something is wrong, but at least for now, he's getting the production. Hopefully, the rest kind of comes along with it. Anyways, I'm going to let you continue this real quick.
That seems almost like set up to be against a player. Like, what if Quay Walker had 3 punch-outs and then 2 bad calls on special teams?
No, because again, let's and it wouldn't be special teams. That's a completely separate grade. This is just defense. But in that case, if we're doing the 0.5 scale, that would be 2 points per punch out, because that's, I'm assuming they give you full credit for a big play like that. So that would be 6 points. And then you said what? 2 negative. What did you say? Hold on. Let me go back and read this nonsensical translation here. And then 2 bad calls. Well, not horrifically bad, I'm assuming, but let's just say -1. So 2 of those, you have -2, you have 3 plus. So it's 6 minus 2, it's +4. That's very positive. So that's going to be a very good grade. That's not what's really happening. You had 1 punch out and then a bunch of negative grades to cancel that out. And again, it would take 4 marginally bad plays to make up for 1 really good play.
Bad grade? That makes no sense. I'm confused. Sorry. It's early.
Yeah, so I think that's my understanding of how that works. Now, how that all comes into what the official overall grade is, I don't know. And there's certain things that you look at and go, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. Like getting an 80 overall pass blocking grade and a 60 overall run blocking grade, and you pass blocked more than you run blocked at the same time as pass blocking is more important than run blocking, although I don't expect them to necessarily differentiate. But you end up with like a 60 overall grade. That confuses me. And I've seen that a few times. I don't know how that all works out. But in terms of that specific thing, if you make a big play, you should have a good grade. I don't agree. I don't like that. Especially, and here's the other issue. I know what a lot of people do when they do their kind of grades or whatever. They weight big plays higher than others. I don't know that I would necessarily do that. For example, if you catch a 3-yard pass for a touchdown, everybody would be like, dude, huge play. It's a touchdown. It's got to be extra points, like it's fantasy football or something. No, you caught a 3-yard pass. You specifically didn't do anything more special than you would have if you were on the 50-yard line. The fact that it resulted in a touchdown doesn't change because, again, what I want to know is how good you are. How much better than average did you do on this particular play? Even like Justin Jefferson on some of those big, deep passes. If it's blown coverage, I'm sorry, I don't give you a ton of credit for catching a pass being wide open and then running when nobody's around. The fact that it happened to be more yards doesn't change anything for me. Maybe for the quarterback because it was further down the field, but again, he's wide open, so it's a much easier throw. But it's always harder to throw 50 yards as opposed to 10 yards. But again, I want to know how much better you are than the other guy, you know? How much better is Tyreek Hill than Romeo Doubs? Well, if Romeo Doubs shakes a guy out of his boots and breaks his ankle and catches a 2-yard pass and then goes out of bounds, and Tyreek Hill's running down the field wide open because of a busted coverage, I don't care that Tyreek Hill got 40 and Romeo Doubs got 3. Doubs was more impressive on that play. The yards are inconsequential. Anybody on planet Earth could have run in a straight line, maybe not as fast as Tyreek, but in a situation where it's a busted coverage and nobody's standing there. You didn't do anything above and beyond average. Romeo did in this situation. That's just what I want to know. And again, I prefer the on a play-to-play basis situation as opposed to big plays negating every single thing. You know, again, I don't want to see, I just wouldn't trust PFF. I wouldn't trust PFF. If I saw somebody, a corner was the highest grade in football, but also saw they had a pick six, I would just disregard it and say, I have no idea how good they did because they just had one play and they played 55 snaps. So 54 of them could be straight garbage. It wouldn't matter. You know what I mean? So I'm not defending specifically what they do because I don't know and I haven't tried, but I just, from that standpoint, I would never want it to be one play could make you, and it's the same for the opposite. You know, if you look at Davis Mills lost the game because of a pick six. Now, obviously he was bad the entire game anyways, but let's say the guy was lights out playing a great game and it really was just the defense that kind of lost everything for him. And then you throw a pick six and you get a terrible grade because, I mean, that was the biggest play of the game. You specifically are the reason that you lost that game. Minus 50 points for you, sir. You can't do that. If you want to develop something else like a clutch metric, how good you do in clutch situations, that's a different thing. If you specifically want to monitor big plays, and those are things, like there's a big play or big time throw metric within PFF. If you want to see how many quarterbacks or how many throws or big time throws for quarterbacks, and then they even give you a percentage. So that's within the system. And it does contribute to the grade, but it's not, you don't want to make it the whole thing. You see what I'm saying? So there are certain things PFF does that I'm like, I have no idea. I feel like you're doing something wrong here. This isn't one of them. If he played 55 snaps and one of them was really good, it doesn't make me sit here and go, how could you possibly give him a bad grade? Well, I don't know. What were the other 54 like? Let's start there. If we're really going to say one should overrule 54, that doesn't quite work for me. Anywho's, why don't we go ahead and take a break right here? Patreon.com/pack_daddy if you'd like to support the podcast. Big shout out to our September, right? Dang it, I just came up with that. The month's almost over. Get in on September. But thank you very much to Robert, Brian, Vicky, Tommy, Mr. Motorcycle, and Shar808. Thank you guys so much for jumping in this month. Really do appreciate that. Also, please visit fertilegroundranch.org or just check out the links pinned to the top of my Twitter or the Packernet Podcast Facebook group. Love to get your support for that ministry. We'll take a break and we'll be right back. Also, before we get started, I just want to say thank you to several other people that I have actually deleted their pledges. I know things are really, really tough right now, and I thank you guys for hanging on as long as you could. But I see a lot of the exit surveys. In other words, when people leave, they ask you, why did you leave? And I'm seeing a lot of people say essentially. Well, we had somebody say inflation is a wild ride. Somebody else saying, you know, financials are tough right now. I'm sure some people, it's just because they don't like me, the content, whatever, something I did to bother them. But the point is, I don't want you to feel bad. You certainly don't need to sacrifice, you know, feeding your family so that you can give me a couple bucks a month or whatever. So I'm not encouraging you to leave. I just, for those that have, I just want you to know I'm not mad at you. I get it. Anyways, let's keep it rocking. Oh, you know what? It's a new caller again. I suck at this, and I'm sorry that I'm the worst. I don't know why I can never remember. I got one rule on this show. New callers go first. And then I'm like, oh, next caller is, I don't know, because I don't have their name in there, because they're a new caller, dummy.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, Ryan, this is Brooke from the Chicago suburbs.
Brooke from Chicago suburbs.
A little terrified right now. Never called in. Actually, that's a lie. I've called in other radio stations, but still terrified. Probably going to ramble for the entire 3 minutes.
Fine.
I wanted to call.
Rambling is what we do here. Brooke from Chicago suburbs. Just randomly curious which Chicago suburbs. You don't have to say, but I am curious because that's where I grew up.
Right after the game, but I'm glad that I listened to a couple of podcasts first. I just find it really funny that we're all watching the same game, but we all have completely different takes on everything.
Yep.
Like after everything was over, people are screaming, why weren't we riding the hot hand? Why weren't we giving the ball to Jones? And me and my family during the entire second half of the game are screaming at the TV, why are we running? Why do we keep giving it to Jones? Jones isn't getting anywhere. We keep giving it to him behind the line and then losing 2 yards. I totally thought that we were going to have negative yards for Jones in the second half of the game because none of the runs seemed to be going anywhere. So I just thought it was really funny that some people were like, why aren't we running more? And I'm like, why are we running so much? It didn't seem like we were passing at all. Why isn't Rodgers doing quick slants, quick passes, get rid of the ball fast? I didn't think that it seemed like he was under duress super tons of the time. It definitely was less than the first two games. I was super stoked when he only got sacked one time. So it seemed like he was abandoning the ability to throw. We had Dobbs, we had Lazard, we had, you know, Tonyan. People were available to be thrown to. We just kept running the ball. But the more I listen to your podcasts, the more it's like, no, we needed to run the ball more. So I love listening because I learn a ton. Been listening to your pods for the past couple of years. Been watching football since I was 11. Probably learned more in the last couple of years than I have my entire life watching football. So super stoked.
I'm going to pause you there for a second. I know it's I'm trying to find like a good spot and that everything runs so smoothly into the next thing. So this is kind of a clunky spot. But before we get too far away from what you're saying, this is why after the game, I spent like 5 minutes talking about how nervous I was to give my takes, because this is exactly what I meant. Everybody sees different things. And I know there are certain things that I saw that probably were wrong. I was stunned when I saw the rushing stats. I thought Aaron Jones did better than he did, which is part of the reason I came on here and was like, why weren't we running with Jones more? And then I go over the stats and I'm like, he had 2 point. Okay. He sucked. It's not my recollection, but okay. I think the stats are all lying. But again, there's also like other narratives that people, it's just, it's not even necessarily, everybody saw different things. And I know you're not alone with like the entire thing with Aaron Rodgers. What I thought I saw in week one, a lot of people thought they saw in week three, which is he has time to throw. He's choosing not to throw. He's, you know, that whole thing. That wasn't what I saw. So I don't know. I got to go back and check it again. I know that he's getting the ball out of his hand faster than just about anybody in football because of the pressure. But yeah, I mean, that's true, and true of everything. Same with Quay. Like, some people are like, you got to check out Quay. He dominated this game. Others not so much. It's down to each individual player. I look at him like, here are the three people that were just awesome. And you'll get people that are like, well, what about this guy? It's like, I didn't even notice him. What did he do? I have no idea. So it is kind of funny. And it's funny too, because if you watch it in a group, like you said, with your family, you start to have that groupthink thing, because you hear people saying it and you start saying it and everybody starts saying it. And somebody else at another party in another group, they're all screaming a different thing. And then you guys talk to each other like, what are you talking about? I have no idea. And that's kind of the benefit of being on Twitter, is everybody's there. So all these takes are kind of coming in, and everybody, you know, you got some that are bad takes and everybody kind of corrects you and brings you back into the fold. And, you know, there's probably a lot of incorrect takes on there, but at least you kind of get an idea and your thoughts don't get too wild and crazy out of the scope of what actually happened. Which again was my concern coming in blind, is like, man, I'm going to say some stuff and everyone's going to be like, what the heck are you talking about, idiot? Maybe Jones is that thing. I don't know. Although I went back and watched and he was doing a great job. It must have been right at the second half, because I didn't watch as much of that, when he must have just run for 0 yards every single time. But in the beginning, he was kind of gashing them pretty good. Anyways, my rant is done. Back to yours.
This is my favorite by far.
Thank you.
Love it when you respond to the people calling, even though they're not there. Pause for a reaction. But yeah.
Missed my window there.
I think that it's really interesting that we all watch the same game and yet everybody has extremely different reactions to everything. But it just seemed like the whole game was like we were in the red zone. We wouldn't get anywhere whenever we tried to go anywhere. I think you had mentioned that in the very first pod after the game, is that it was like red zone short field. So I'm still trying to understand everything, still learning everything, but I just thought that was really interesting. So keep up the good work. Thank you so much. Bye.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Brooks from Chicago suburbs. I put Brooks Chicago. I should change that, because that is different. No, actually, I shouldn't. That's another rule I have. Got to leave it. Even after you learn that's not the correct name, you got to roll with it. Right, Bramble? And I kind of think part of it, too, is the little narratives start in our head at the beginning of the game, and then everything kind of becomes that little positive reinforcement feedback loop thing, right? So for me, I see Rodgers under pressure and kind of a run game. You know, again, early on, the run game was working. So in my head, this is the situation. We're running pretty well. We can't pass because Rodgers doesn't have time. And then throughout the game, I mean, if Rodgers has time, it's just, it doesn't really register. But every single time you see that thing that you think is sort of that underlying issue, it really embeds itself in your brain. It's like, there it is again. There it is again. There it is again. And for you and your family, it's, we can't run the ball very well. So if he runs for a good gain, it's just, it's sort of a, oh, finally. If he doesn't, it's, see, again, you know what I mean? So it really just, you hammer that point, and then it really just becomes this giant theme of the game, which for you is one thing, for me is another thing. And then, yeah, you talk to that person, and it's like, what the heck game were you watching? You stupid jerk wad. Why don't you get a life? Something like that. I don't know how you handle that situation, but it's different for different people.
Yo, Ryan, this is Jim from Arkansas.
What's going on, Jim?
So, you know, everyone's talking about the line, what we're going to do with Yash, especially while, you know, Bakhtiari's coming back. Well, hey, if Bakhtiari's back full time, you know, why don't we move Bakhtiari to the right tackle? Let Yash stay at left tackle where he's been pretty good. I think Bach, the stud that he is, he should be just fine no matter where they put him on the line. Anyways, I haven't heard anyone say this. Give me your thoughts, man.
I saw one person say it. It might have been you. I doubt it. But I was kind of shocked, to be honest, just from my perspective, that it was even being suggested, because it feels so unbelievably blasphemous to take one of the best left tackles in football and put him over to right tackle because Yash is adequate as a left tackle. I really just think it speaks too much to Yash. I mean, if we're going to say that it doesn't make left or right doesn't make a big difference, put Yash at right tackle, especially considering he's played right tackle. I mean, it was 2018 and it was in college, but hey, he played right tackle at Virginia Tech. I don't know. I do think it's somewhat overinflating Yash Nyman. I think he's doing a decent job, but again, and I'm planning on doing a video after this. I'm not sure what I'm going to do as far as offensive line, but you know, very, very distinct difference between David Bakhtiari. And I know you're not saying that he's on that level, but the drop off was staggering when even with David Bakhtiari's first return after a year plus long hiatus. So I'm not moving a premier left tackle off a left tackle in hopes that maybe David could figure out right tackle. I'm never doing that. It's one of the most important positions in football, left tackle, and I'm leaving him there. Now, maybe Yash plays right tackle and Elton moves into guard. Maybe. I don't think so for similar reasons. I think Elton they view as a premier tackle, and you leave a premier tackle in at premier tackle, even if Yash is a better player than Royce, which if we're just talking best five. I don't think they're going to do that. I personally don't mind, partially because Elton has been struggling, and I think my view of Elton is kind of skewed, and I'm forgetting how good he was last time he played at tackle. But look, I just think tackle is the most important thing, and we've got two good tackles, and you don't take a premier tackle and put him at guard. I don't think that's going to happen. Now, if Yash Nyman was like on Elton Jenkins' level, then yeah, of course. But again, I think we're just kind of overinflating him. So I don't think that's going to happen. David Bakhtiari is not moving off a left tackle. Whether or not they decide to put Yash at tackle and Elton at guard, the only way that I think that happens is maybe there's some kind of an issue with his injury and the, you know, maybe the athleticism is struggling a bit, flexibility kind of thing, issue going on. Maybe you kick him inside so he doesn't have to do quite as much movement. But even that, I would assume, would be kind of short-term temporary. So I don't mind the move of Yash at tackle and Elton at guard, but I don't think it happens. And I don't think there's any world in which they would put David Bakhtiari at right tackle. Just my thoughts. I don't know. Kind of depends your thought on the ability to move. It depends, you know, do you think left tackle is much more important than right tackle these days? Because it doesn't seem to be, but it is the quarterback's blind side. And then your thoughts on Royce, your thoughts on Yash, your thoughts on Elton, and your thoughts on David Bakhtiari also factor into what you would personally do. But those are my thoughts based on how I feel about all those factors.
Hey, Ryan. Scuba Steve here.
Hey, Scuba Steve. I'm good, man. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Good. Sorry about not calling for a while.
Oh, that's all right.
Funny story.
Good.
I was actually calling almost daily.
Yeah.
But it was the wrong phone number.
Oh, boy.
And finally, some guy called me up, and he was a little angry. He said, "My name's Joe, not Ryan. Quit calling me." So I said, okay. But
just, can you imagine? I mean, think back about some of Scuba Steve's calls. Can you imagine just some guy calling and saying all that stuff randomly on your phone? That would be amazing. I can't even imagine calling back and being angry. I would just text the guy and be like, what would you say? How you feeling? I don't know. I have no idea, but that's hilarious.
Then I called him one more time.
Yeah.
I said, hey, you need to listen to the Packernet podcast.
It's
the best podcast ever.
By the way, speaking of, I want things to translate into Packernet podcast. It translated Packernet podcast into Packin' That podcast. That's not it. That's not it at all. Google hates me.
So, Ryan.
Yes.
Joe's listening.
Hey.
I want you to welcome him.
Hey, Joe.
And Joe. Yeah, I'm sorry about all those voice notes. I know some of them were weird. So, Ryan. Well, you know, I don't have a question.
Yeah.
But I would like you to rank the fan base of each NFC North team in also kind of describe them. You know, for instance, I would describe the Detroit Lions fan base as realistic. Now, Sunday, they wanted to win. They were hoping to win, but deep down in their hearts, they knew they were going to lose. So, all right, Ryan. Hope you have a great day. Bye.
All right, man. Bye. Y'all come back now here. So Packers are going to be number one. They've been loyal since forever. They've sold out the stadium since forever. They're one of the best traveling teams. The noise thing is problematic, and it's annoying, and it's a thing. But I tell you what, it is nice hearing Go Pack, Go Chance in Tampa Bay and everything else, because they're just it's a powerhouse fan base for sure. Kind of tough to pick another one beyond that. I'm leaning Lions just because any fan base that can stick with that team through what they've been through is pretty rough. Granted, the Bears have been through some stuff too, but they've been to a Super Bowl. They've been to the playoffs and things. I'll probably go Lions second. I know that's going to seem nuts because there's like 17 of them and they don't travel. Like, it's not a thing they do unless you happen to be a transplant, you know, a Lions fan that lives in Tampa that goes to the Bucs game. I don't know. Or maybe like a really close one, you know, Indy or something. There are a lot of teams kind of close by. I mean, driving distance, Chicago, even Green Bay is somewhat manageable. But then you got like Cleveland there. You got all the Pennsylvania based teams, not super close, but it's in the area. I don't know much about Vikings fans. I really don't, other than social media, which is a tough place to be. I know Chicago's last, though, so I guess Minnesota has to be third. And the reason Chicago's last is because I grew up there. And again, here's how I describe Chicago Bears fans for those that haven't heard it. It's a person who hates the Green Bay Packers, whose second favorite team is the Bears. I don't know a single human being, and I know there's lots of them, but I don't know them, whose number one team that is a Bears fan is the Bears. My buddy John, who I grew up with my whole life, favorite team is the Broncos. He's a Bears fan. His brother is a Bills fan. I don't even know what his other brother is. Maybe he's a true loyalist Bears fan. I have no idea. They all have allegiances outside of Chicago. But the number one thing that they all root for is for the Packers to fail. On top of that, they are ruthless. They're one of the more unrealistic fan bases, but also completely ruthless. So here's how it works. They have somebody that is the greatest person of all time. They deserve all the respect in the world. They're, you know, wonders to behold, and they will erect statues and trophies and everything else. And the second they leave, they're a bum, right? I'll never, ever, ever forget how they treated Brian Urlacher. He's washed up. Doesn't matter. Doesn't impact us at all. Are you out of your mind? They're basically, their overall reaction was good riddance. Same thing they said about Julius Peppers. Guy was a great football player for Chicago. He came in, did some wonderful things. He left and went to the Packers. Good riddance. He's washed up. You Packer fans are idiots for picking him up. He's got nothing. Then they went out and got Allen from Minnesota, who was completely nothing. But of course, they loved him until he didn't do anything. Then they hated him. I mean, they will turn on you so fast. So it's what they did to Trubisky, right? He's great. He's all these things. He's going to be a great quarterback. And as soon as it became clear he wasn't, they hated him. And that's exactly what they're going to do to Fields as soon as they figure it out. Some of them already have, but they're vicious. So I don't know. I guess it depends on the criteria, but Packers number one, Lions just because, you know, sticking by that team requires some serious fortitude. Vikings number three by default because I don't know anything about them, and then Bears fans last just because they don't actually care about the team. They don't actually care about the players. They seem to just want to be the best, and they certainly just want to be better than Green Bay because they see Wisconsin as this backwoods, redneck, garbage state that doesn't belong anywhere near a place that is as glorious and wonderful as Chicago. And the fact that the Packers are just better drives them nuts. And they just demand, because they got this little man syndrome, you know, because everybody thinks about New York and LA and nobody cares about Chicago, which to be fair is somewhat unfair, especially when it comes to food, but they hate it. They hate that nobody cares about Chicago and they want to be recognized as the greatest. You know, Dallas is a massive thing with massive fan base and all that. Again, New York and LA and all these big cities. Nobody cares about Chicago in anything, including sports. It's not even seen as like a great, I mean, to some people, it's probably a great sports city, I guess, but it's not. You had the Bulls that were a massive thing for a while. That's pretty much it. Does anybody care about the Cubs? you know, all the history and everything that goes. Same with the Bears, one of the most historic teams in football. If you ask somebody, a random person, about the historic teams in football, probably talk about the Packers, which is going to drive them nuts. But it's true. Everything that they're good at and known for, somebody else is known for it more. History, Packers, you know, dynasties, I don't know, the Steelers or the 49ers or the Patriots or whatever. Nobody remembers the 1920s Bears or... So I understand the frustration. I'm just saying that's where I think a lot of this comes from. Imagine being like the older brother who has a really good job and a lot of money and is just very successful. But you got this younger brother who's kind of a lowlife, but has all the looks and all the charisma and everybody loves him. And anytime he does anything, it's like, that's awesome. You know, like he's got a junker car, but he built it with his bare hands. And so when people come over, they don't want to look at your like Audi or whatever it is you're cruising around in. $50,000 car you paid for in cash. They want to see Frank's car that he built but with his bare hands as he shows you with his leather jacket. It's like, I hate this guy. He, dude, so what? Look at my car's better than his car. This is stupid. You can understand the frustration. Just is what it is, though. We're that younger brother with all the charisma, all the charm of small town Green Bay, the historicity. It's a football town. Drives him nuts.
Hey, Pack Daddy, this is Henry out in Tennessee.
Going on?
Not staring at a lake this time.
All right.
To answer your question, yes, I'm Minnesotan. Sorry I didn't call in yesterday. I was going to say, your family sounds absolutely lovely.
Thanks.
But to the Packers, if you could replace one interior lineman, who would you replace?
Okay.
I'm obsessed with this question right now because I hate the interior of our line. I think Elton will be fine. I just... really, really don't like how the interior of the line is doing. Okay. Have a good one. Screw Minnesota.
Sounds good. If I could replace anyone, who would it be? I mean, my sights are set on Royce. I hate to keep picking on the guy. I know he's trying. He's just not doing a great job. And actually, in this last game, I mentioned how I started charting the offensive linemen. I only got through the first quarter-ish, maybe close to the first half, I don't know. But Royce was one of the few guys actually doing a pretty good job. He didn't grade out very well at the end of this game. But just saying, I was starting to appreciate what he was doing. But let's just look at it real quick. We got John Runyon. Good pass blocker, bad run blocker. That's what he's always been. He has not given up a single pressure this entire season. Not one. He is the only player to not give up a pressure this entire season. Even David Bakhtiari, who's only played 35 snaps so far, has already given up a pressure. Jake Hansen, who's played, 64 snaps so far, has given up 4 pressures. So, you know, I know he struggles in run blocking or whatever, and I'm sure at some point in some world, you'd want to upgrade that and find a guy that's just as good as a pass blocker, but can actually do a better job run blocking. But this dude ain't going anywhere. Zero pressures is what I'm looking for, and that's what he delivers. So the only other option is Josh Myers, but he's kind of similar to Royce in that the struggle so far has been run blocking. The pass blocking has been decent. He's got a 72 overall pass blocking grade. He's only given up 2 pressures, and both of them were hurried. So 0 sacks, 0 hits, and he's never given up more than 1 pressure in a game. Week 1, he gave up 1 to Minnesota, 0 against Chicago, 1 against Tampa Bay. That's it. So, you know... is Josh a dominant guy, kind of like what we got out of Elton when we picked up a second-round guy? No, not so far. But then you come over to Royce, and the guy's given up 7 pressures. 7. Now, what really sucks is Elton Jenkins has given up 6, but currently the lowest pass-blocking grade on the team is Elton Jenkins. But again, if you're just talking interior, and I agree Elton's going to kind of turn it around and get it figured out or whatever, I'm quite positive, especially the way that Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers have been talking about him, that he's still battling through some injuries right now. The fact that they've been praising him coming back, I think he's coming back kind of early and just fighting through some pain would be my assumption. I don't know. But, I mean, it's got to be Royce. There's no other way to put it. I mean, he's given up more pressures than anybody on the team. Again, Elton is 6, and then after that is Jake Hansen and Josh Nyman with 4. So... Josh Myers would be the only other guy. The two other guys combined have given up 2 pressures. John Runyon and Josh Myers have given up 2 combined. Royce has given up 7. 7. That's a lot. 7 in 3 games? Kind of shocked to see that it's not higher up on the list of overall. He's tied for 17th with 7. There's a guy out there with 14 pressures he's given up. Chargers guard Matt Feeler. You got Dallas offensive guard Matt Farniok with 13. Gabe Jackson in Seattle, 13. Lakin Tomlinson for the Jets, 13. Elijah Vera Tucker with the Jets, 11. He's next on the list. Logan Sternberg, Ed Ingram in Minnesota. Mark Glowinski, 10. So I guess there's a lot of things that are worse. Minnesota's Ezra Cleveland has given up 9. But yeah, Royce's... Logan Sternberg in Detroit has a 0 pass blocking grade. That's rough. That is rough. Yeah, I think the answer is pretty obvious. It's got to be Royce. I mean, the only way he could possibly redeem himself with the 7 pressures is if he was just a dominant run blocker. He's not. I don't think he's really any better than the other guy. So there's the answer.